Warning, ProTri News is a podcast with different opinions, knowledge and possibly fake news about triathlon racing. This is not for the faint of heart. If you get offended or hurt by what is said, please stop listening and go listen to some uplifting meditation music or just go work out, then try again.
I started using the Magic 5 goggles back in 2021. For the last decade, I struggled to find a pair of goggles that didn't leak or fog up during a workout. When you're like me and wear contacts, having goggles that leak simply won't cut it. The Magic 5 has solved this and my goggle leakage problem with their easy-to-use 3-step face scan that optimally fits your goggles to your face. What does Jan Frodeno, Ben Canute, Daniel Backegaard, Lauren Brannon, and Vanilla Language all have in common? Besides being the best swimmers in the sport, they also use Magic 5. Visit themagic5.com/PTN and get your goggles today. This is affiliate code, not a discount code, because each pair of goggles that you buy helps support us, ProTri News, to keep this show going. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, welcome back to another episode of ProTri News. I am your host, Kyle Glass, joined today by Mr. Talbot Cox. Talbot, how are you doing today? I know you were on the beach last week, so are you feeling relaxed and refreshed after your European vacation and then now your beach vacation?
Well, there's a difference between a work trip vacation and a vacation. I usually need a post-vacation. So I'm on that right now at my house, which involves a lot of Oculus. But today, for all those that are listening, because I know a majority of you are males, if you want to get on your wife's good side this week so you can watch triathlon or football or whatever it is, Starbucks is now selling their pumpkin spice cappuccinos, lattes, and all that. So this morning, me and my wife went on a coffee date and got pumpkin spice overpriced coffee at Starbucks. And I'm drinking that right now.
Did Starbucks become a podcast sponsor? I didn't know about it.
I'm sorry. Also on the show today, Pat Lemieux.
Guys, I made a quick trip to Europe with my youngest son, George. I went and saw Gwen race in Carlo Vivari, which we'll cover later in the show. The highlight for me was I got to drive on the Autobahn, and I went super fast. And
how fast? Just say a number.
220.
KPH?
220 KPH, and it was awesome, and I was just terrified that I was going to have some sort of speeding violation or traffic camera, and so I texted one of my dear friends at who also works at Canyon, and I sent a screenshot of what the sign looks like for no speed limit, and I said, hey, like, you guys really mean it? No speed limit? After this sign, I can really go whatever speed I want? And he said, Patrick, full gas. So it was an awesome trip. I think I'm going to head back to Europe next Wednesday for the grand final, and I'm going to bring Stanley. And yeah, just
the thrilled. Grand final. It seems that that your wife may have rolled onto the start list.
She did. She rolled on this morning. I was jet lagged at 3 a.m. and I happened to just click on the list to see, and she was on it. So yeah, happy days. And she's in Pontevedra right now, training with a couple of men that happen to be pretty good at triathlon as well. So more on that soon. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it was great for me because I was in Europe. I was super disappointed I wasn't at the race in Nice, but to be on the same time zone and watch from the beginning, I feel like I'm really happy to lend that insight into the show. So yeah, I mean, thrilled to talk about it. Big show on tap.
It's a big show. There was a big weekend of racing. If you did not wake up to watch the race and then just saw the results, we'll just run through exactly what happened at the World Championships in Nice. The swim was led out by American Matthew Marquardt, and there was about 11 people in that group coming out of the water with him. They all started the climb, and then off went Sam Laidlow and Clement Mignon. Clement Mignon started dropping back, and then Sam Laidlow just hammered it and then kept going off the front, kept going. Sam Laidlow actually posted the fastest bike split of the day, and then they got to the run, and Sam did everything that he needed to become the youngest ever Ironman champion and the first French champion. Fastest run of the day went to Patrick Lang, running a 2:32, which is just flying. I think that we're close to seeing the day that someone's going to run sub 2:30. But as far as the race goes, there was definitely some DNFs that I think that there were some heavy favorites. So like Peter Heimerich DNF'd. He was pretty heavy favorite to do well, as well as Dennis Chevreau, who was heavy favorite to do well. Chris Lieferman actually crashed on the bike, and so we're hoping he's all right. And what did you guys think of the race?
Absolutely phenomenal race. Coverage was spectacular. Just want to hit on the motos real quick. With unfortunate circumstances comes usually positive results a majority of times, and with a terrible incident that happened in Hamburg earlier this year resulted in Ironman upping their moto game, and now I can't even remember the name of the moto company, but I think it's called Media Motos, who's who they hire now. And all of these guys on these motos are the same moto drivers that are in the Tour de France. So that's why you saw those epic drop down shots of Magnus and them descending. We even chatted with Kenny for a second, who was on the ground filming, and he said that he was scared for his entire life for the bike, for the moto segment. And he said he got on that moto driver, and that moto driver just, he never felt more comfortable. He's like, it was absolutely insane. So, and then, I mean, fair motos all day, no motor pacing, no nothing. So
yeah, I've got a friend that has hired Media Motos multiple times for his business, and he said that there is no other organization, period. Doesn't matter the industry. He goes, Media Motos is one of the most professional organizations that he's ever worked with. He's like, if you need to hire them to shoot a commercial or anything related to that, they're absolutely incredible. So obviously they're really tightening their game, and you know, I think if we could talk about the broadcast for a second, I think the imagery and it just being a world championships on a completely different course was something that was really fun to watch. And it was interesting. And, you know, I think we're going to dive into that more. But at first take, you know, I think we all agree it felt like a world championship, even though it wasn't in Kona. Where maybe it's after St. George, we're all a little bit more used to that, or the idea of that, I guess. And then I think, you know, the big thing was that we really know a lot about, but probably the audience doesn't know a lot about, was this pro briefing on the back of, you know, the event where Lionel got disqualified in Finland. And, you know, Talbot or Kyle, maybe give us some insight into what that looked like, and you know, maybe some of the positivity that came from a rough time in Finland.
I'll hit on it. We had a few videos sent to us of some athletes getting pretty fired up because before the race, we posted about Ironman updated the rule and said if you cross the center line, it may result in a disqualification. So some athletes raised a question at the pro race briefing, and it got a little heated. And then after it, I ring up Lionel, and I'm like, Lionel, this is bullcrap. They're saying that they may or may not disqualify people, but then they're able to disqualify you. Like, that's such, like, I bet so many people are going to cross the center line, and I'm expecting Lionel to be like, yeah, they should get disqualified. But I mean, I'm not just like, people are like, you're bringing up Lionel in this, but this is just like inside conversation. He was like, Talbot, it is dumb that I got disqualified. He was like, it is good that it's going to be discretionary. It should be may. If someone is riding on the other side of the road to gain an unfair advantage and cut the course, they should be disqualified. But if you have to make a pass and have to cross the center line for a second, I don't believe you should get disqualified. So it's good that it's going to be like that. And he was like, the last thing we want is to see someone's race taken away from them that has to cross the center line, unfortunately. He goes, I don't think that they should do that. So it was pretty heated, but I would say that it was very fair calling. There was two penalties on the day, Braden Curry, Bradley Weiss. Bradley Weiss penalty, he was very heated in the moment. If you add 5 minutes to his time from his penalty, I mean, it's hard to say that because he would have stayed with that front group, but it would only put him two positions higher, or three maybe. So that was unfortunate. And then he got a drafting penalty. And then Braden Curry got a, from what I read, an intentional littering penalty, but he continued the race and protested at the end and had it taken away. But he said it was hard to get back into the mindset after you had received a 5 minute penalty. And I don't believe he served it.
Can we talk about, you know, I think in the race, which you know, you guys would have been in the middle of the night for you. But, you know, I thought Jan obviously looked on. He looked great and he had a ton of coverage. And then all of a sudden the coverage went away once they got the climb, which started at 40K in. And then we realized based on where he was that he was clearly getting passed, right? And he was at the back of a group all of a sudden. You know, we had heard that he was under some issue. You know, that was the whispers that I shared about, and clearly that was the case. But, you know, I guess it was a real bummer to see him not be in contention for the win, but I think really admirable that he completed and finished the race in what was his, you know, final professional race.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was very, you saw him kind of going backwards quick, but it was, and then when we saw that Cam Wirf pass him, we were like, oh wow, Cam Wirf was just 4 minutes down. So he is really, really going backwards fast.
Yeah, but losing some time. We
did hear some insight that he was injured going into the race, had a PT working with him and Adora heading all the way into the race. And then too, I chatted about this on the Jack Kelly podcast. The Jan in Wisconsin was like, I am here to kill. And when Jan is on, he that's how he is. He's the alpha. And you didn't really see a whole lot of that this week going into the race. I still picked him for the win because I thought he's going to pull it off. But you could kind of tell going into the race too that he was not as confident, if that more so say.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the first time ever in 10 years that Patrick Lang outrode Jan. So that's definitely something to take into account. But Patrick was also just firing on all cylinders. Patrick had probably the race of his career. Now Patrick has two wins at the Ironman World Championship and two podiums. So, I mean, Patrick solidifying himself as one of the next great German. We'll see how long.
So I think the big question is reflecting on last week's show. What did we all get right? What did we all get wrong? Right. And so I said a French victory. Okay. So Kyle, you got that right. I mean, I'm going to have to eat a little crow because I don't know if I said it publicly, but I said, Sam Laidlaw would not feature. He clearly featured more than anybody else. So, I will acknowledge when I'm wrong. It was high stakes for him. He had a great race last year in Kona. He was second place. He clearly capitalized on that financially, and then all year essentially did nothing, right? And so sponsors would have began to wonder what they were paying for, and he reminded them on Sunday, and you know, I think that's a reality. So that's one that I got wrong. I said that Patrick Lang would be over, he would have a double digit deficit and he would still podium. And I got that right. He was over 10 minutes down to Sam Laidlaw, and he, you know, I think he easily ran into second place. And yeah. So, and he looked great. He really, really looked great. And I think that's something. The other thing that just from a race and a broadcast standpoint, I was really worried that visually with the four laps on the promenade, it wasn't going to look great on TV. I thought the broadcast looked great on TV doing the four lap run course. And I thought that run course looked great on TV. So I think those were probably my three biggest takeaways from the weekend.
The other thing would be Talbot. Do you have insights for how you feel?
I think that the biggest thing that I take away and that a lot of the athletes will take away next week the female athletes will take away coming into the race is there's three athletes, essentially four athletes that rode absolutely incredible on this race. And there's four athletes that rode actually absolutely incredible on this course. And that was Sam Laidlaw, Bradley Weiss rode good, Magnus Ditlev, and Rudy Von Berg, which is three of those guys basically lived and trained on this course. Well, Bradley Weiss is just an incredible climber, and then Magnus is a great biker. So if you could take away anything in this, Sam Laidlaw walked away from this race. Well, last year when he heard the course, he was there in January training on this course, rode it 2 days in a row. He went back multiple times throughout this year. He won this race from riding that course.
Yeah. Sorry, one last other takeaway just from so Talbot, you're absolutely right. And then that makes me want to acknowledge Rudy Von Berg, who got fourth place. And I think that's a fantastic result for him. And I have to give credit where it's due. I think that's a really impressive result for him. And, you know, obviously he would have wanted, you know, to be first, second, or third, right? But I think fourth place is on that day, on that with that field, I think that's something that he can really, really be proud of. And my question is, you know, the biggest thing is just what do we think the women learned by watching this race? And obviously, there was a lot of noise around bike modifications. I think everybody basically just figured out next year they're going to run the lightest possible triathlon specific setup they're going to use, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the theme here. And it's still a lot of riding on the flats. It's one big climb, one pretty big climb, and then a big descent. But it's nothing crazy. But yeah, I just thought it was cool to see the race kicked open. And yeah, it was fun to watch something other than Kona. I'll say it.
Just speaking about my bike modifications, Pat, did you talk to Magnus after the race? Did he feel like the dropper post was a good idea, bad idea?
Yeah, it plays. It plays. Yeah, and I think for those that, you know, there were a lot of people, you know, Kyle included, right, where I was like, oh, Magnus is using a dropper post, and there's a lot of people in the triathlon world that said, what's that? Never heard of it. For those that are mountain biking, it's something that we weren't using 5 years ago, but now we can't live without it. And to, just to give you some understanding, this isn't something that you can just go and put on any triathlon bike. You have to get, you know, what is ultimately the bike frame to accept it. And it's you have to make something special. You got to make something custom. So for those people that go to their local bike shop and say, hey, I want to put a dropper post on my bike for next year. Sorry guys. That I do not disturb on. It's a big problem. It's not something that you can just do easily.
I think that where going back to Sam, I just think if the women are going to take away anything, if you get out here and you learn the ins and outs of this course, I mean, how much faster did he run? 10 minutes faster, 9 minutes faster than Sam Laidlow. That's what Patrick won, and he still won by nearly 3 minutes. I mean, that is insane. And so Sam Laidlow left no stone unturned on that descent. I mean, at one point, he almost hit the wall and went over it. I mean, he descended that thing better than every single person there, and he was riding for his life because he knew he needed a big gap coming off the bike, and he did it. And I think that a lot of people underestimated that descent. We chatted about a lot. I mean, I don't know how many times I hit out. A lot of people are going to lose. I mean, I look at someone like Lionel Sanders. I would say that he would outclimb a lot of the people, power to weight ratio. He'd be more like a Bradley Wise, but I would bet that he would have lost nearly 10 minutes on that descent to someone like Sam Laidlow. So yeah. That descent is everything. So I think that for the females going in, you're going to see a lot of athletes spending a lot of time there, doing some camps there, riding that course, figuring out that course. So that's my thoughts.
Something I talked about on the show pre-Nice was, you were like, oh, how are you feel about this? Will it be something that we could see in Kona? Is this a podium we could see in Kona? I would 100% believe that this top three is something that we could see in Kona. So I'm 100% bought in Nice. It's a world championship. I think people need to get on board with it. Nice is a fantastic place if you've never been before. Yeah, sure. It's not freaking lava fields and poke bowls every day, but it's chocolate croissants and some epic descents down the mountain. So fantastic race. Any other big takeaways you have, Talbot?
I think that's about it. Yeah, Ironman just proved again that they can put on a show. And it was extremely exciting to watch. Hats off to all the athletes that raced. Really cool to see Jan finish. That will be Jan's last ever Ironman World Championship we'll see him in. I still believe that next year we'll see Jan toe the line in 70.3s and some like adventure fun races. I bet you probably see him try to go win a gold medal or a world title in Xterra I think that he'll go have some fun in other events. This is definitely not Jan's last ever. He's not retiring from the sport, in my opinion. But yeah, it'll be exciting times ahead. What are your thoughts on Jan? Do you think he's retired, or do you think we're going to see him in some other events?
He looked pretty happy to be done. So I think had you asked me this last week, I was like, absolutely not. He's doing a full Tom Brady. There's going to be a comeback for Kona. Part of me still thinks that, but I think the reality is had he won in Nice, he would have stayed one more year. I think he realized that like it's just really tough to stay mechanically sound for this. And this is something he's fought with for a lot of his career. I think he's going to be really present. After what I saw in Milwaukee, he can win on the Big Island one more time. I really do believe that. It's a massive amount of emotional and physical energy that he'd have to put in. And I'm not sure if he's ready to do that. But I think, never say never. I'm not willing to write him off. Absolutely not.
Yeah, makes sense. My final word, shout out to the commentator, Michael Lovato and Didi Griesbauer, commentating through the night. I know how difficult that is for commentating for 2 hours, let alone commentating an entire race for 8, 9, 10 hours. So shout out to them for continuing to voice of Ironman.
Can I kind of do one? I want to do one last thing, and I'm going to bring this up, and then I'm going to save it until Kona, because I don't think we're going to know until then. I'm really seeing, after just watching it visually, and then I'll personally be at Kona, so I think I'll have a better frame of reference. I think what we're seeing is, if we got 4 years of these races being separated, I think that it's not a great look for the sport. I don't like that these races are separated right now, is my initial thought. I like if they're separated by a day, if we could have the men on Saturday, women on Sunday type of situation, or flip-flop, I don't care. But I think this men-only situation, racing in one location and the women-only racing in another location, I'm talking to people in the industry every single day. And, you know, while a lot of these companies are European-based, they really like it being in Nice. It's very clear that they don't want to travel twice for world championships. And I think that's something this could be a long 4-year journey with this event being split.
I'd back you on that. I mean, I myself tried to get work, wanted to go to kind of do like a knee series and things like that. Not a lot of sponsors were wanting to jump on board. A lot of sponsors sat back. Pat, you said earlier that you talked to someone on the ground. They said it was a giant sausage fest.
I think it'll be a little more balanced, right, at Kona, just because this sport is so male heavy on the industry side, and so I think it'll feel a little bit different. But I don't. It's too soon to probably bash or understand like how behind Ironman was on the numbers side of it, where they had the ability to allow way more people to race, to actually race the event. And I think everybody was looking at this as a wait and see and go, okay, well, do I want to save that for Kona next year? And so I don't think, again, I think that this next 3 years is potentially, there's a lot of indigestion. And I think from an org standpoint, it's clear that Ironman is King Kong. I mean, everything from the broadcast to the carpet to the podium to the transition, all of that stuff looked incredible. It is way, they are first in class there. But I do not like this 5 weeks apart for the world championships. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I'll have to wait and see before I make mine. I don't want to sit, not go to one first and see. It is really cool that the females are getting their own day. The males are getting their own day. I think we just need to see it first. An interesting, the overall female winner at Wisconsin this weekend, Becca
Kia, I don't know how to say her last name. Her husband's on Everyman Jack, but I mean, she won the overall female and he won his, or got third in his age group or whatever, something like that. But they both turned down their slots because they love to go to the world championships together. It's something that they love to do, train together and all that. And it's just like, we're split. So neither of us are even going to take our slots. We're just going to go do Ironmans that we can race together at. So I know that's a very rare scenario, but a lot of that is how it, like someone like, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited to head out to Kona, check it out, and see how the event goes as well. But it'll be interesting to see what the new CEO says as well that Ironman brings in.
Other races that happened this weekend, we had the World Cup in Karlovy Vary. Patrick, you were there on the ground enjoying the race.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it was, you know, I thought the weather was going to be, this is a race that rains a lot, and the weather was amazing all week. It was low 50s in the morning, and then by the afternoon it'd be 75, 78. Could not have been a better location. I want to really give a shout out to the LOC, who had the whole event dialed. They've been doing the race there for a very long time. Course safety, I want to say, for the fencing that they used and everything, that was the absolute best I've ever seen from, you know, the only one that was maybe better was in Cagliari. They did a really great job as well. So I think that was super great. Logistically, this is a challenging race because it's a split transition. So they swim out at a lake, which is 6K away from T2. And so in the morning of the race, you do a gear drop at T2, and then you ride your bike out to T1 and set up for the swim. And then everything gets transferred in. So you've got a really technical swim, which is in a, I'll call it a pond, but you swim around an island on the pond. It's a 2-lap swim, and it was interesting. Both in the men and the women's race, they had swimmers that were present. It's Bianchi Seragini, and then on the men's side, is it Joe who was second place from Hungary?
Mark Duvet.
Duvet, sorry, I apologize. And so, yeah, 7-lap bike course. It's 1,000 meters of climbing, and for those that don't know, if you want to go ride your bike 40 kilometers and do 1,000 meters of climbing, your legs are going to be tired at the end. So, with Gwen specifically, the hill is 20%. I brought her a bike that was a quote unquote climbing bike, and she had a 36 inner chainring and a 34 on the back. That's a very easy gear. I said, did you ever use 34? And she goes, every single lap. She goes, I use my easiest gear and every single lap. That hill was steep. So yeah, on the women's race, you had my wife, Gwen, who backed up a win in Valencia. She out-sprinted Rachel Klammer, and then Marlene Gomez-Gogol in for third. But Marlene served a 10-second penalty and caught Julie Darren on the last lap to overtake for third. So I thought that was really fantastic. On the men's race, you had Morgan Pearson, who I'm apologize, I did not end it, but if you go back and listen, you will hear me talk about how strong Morgan was on the bike. And I feel a little bit like Nostradamus right now because he attacked and went solo on the bike and then extended his lead on the run. So you had Morgan Pearson, who easily came in across the line in first. You had Mark Duvet from Hungary, who had a fantastic race. He's known for leading World Series swims. He came in second. And then Jonas Schoenberg in third, Kyle, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So, yeah, I thought a real interesting race. Yeah, I don't know. It was super fun. And I'll be at Pontevedra in a week and a half. So I'll be able to, follow that one as well. So, I think a really cool course, and it was a race that, if you know there's any athletes that are listening, definitely put that one on the calendar. It's super, super cool.
Yeah. The Americans, both of them are doing Pontevedra, so it'll be exciting to watch. Hopefully they're able to back up these races with another successful race. The other race we had, Challenge Almir, which is ITU European Championship. Elsvisser won the race on the women's side, and on the men's side, Menno Koolhaas from the Netherlands. He's had a fantastic season, rocketed up the rankings. He's sitting 24th right now in the rankings. So definitely a name to watch for from the Netherlands. Kieran Linders, there was a video that was pumped out by How They Train of him basically stumbling and crawling his way to take second place. So that video was
I hate watching those videos. That's not something that I don't enjoy the virality of those and how quickly they spread. And that's something that I know that there's videos like that of Julie Moss that really kind of, you know, made triathlon really visible. But yeah, I just, and same thing with them with the Brownlees and Cozumel. I feel icky when I watch those. I don't like that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So that was a big race that happened this weekend. Also, the 70.3 Down Under in the Sunshine Coast. Bec Clark got her first win ever. She's been racing a lot this season, had a lot of big time races. I believe she did the entire PTO tour and was able to come away with a victory, edging out Radke Kaufelt. And then on the men's side, Nick Thompson from Australia won. Another name I've never heard of. It's like the Wild West down in Australia. You never know who's going to win. You can look at the start list and be like, oh, Steve McKenna's there, Mitch Kirby, Nicholas Freese there, who have all done well and won races, Tim Van Berkel, and then some random Australian kid will come and just win the race and spoil the party for everyone. So definitely something that you have to account for down with racing in Australia.
All right.
So something we need to address. Mark's been away, but he's coming back. So everyone, if you're concerned about Mark, just send him a message and be like, I'm looking forward to you coming back.
He's coming. He would have been on this week's pod, but he's got some spotty Wi-Fi and this training camp that he's, you know, got dragged along to. Dude, he's been all over. He'll be back next week. It's no dramas at all.
No dramas. So as always, Waterfall Racing is all about community and welcomes triathletes from all walks of life, last place and first place. The annual fee is $75 to join. It's the best deal in triathlon, so be sure to join today. You could also join Waterfall Bank. Waterfall Bank is a FDIC bank that provides both commercial and personal banking for companies and individuals who want the best technology and top-tier customer service. Go to waterfallbank.com to learn more.
I got to do a lap on the customer service, which is just absolutely insane. So I got to do a bunch of crazy international wire transfers. And, you know, if I have any questions, I just pick up the phone, call somebody, talk to a real person, and they just get it taken care of. So if you've got some crazy banking needs, you need to check out Waterfall Bank.
Love it. The race is coming up this weekend. We have Ironman Italy. I'm not sure if Bradley Weiss is going to be making this journey, but he is on the start list. You also have David McNamee, Florian Anger, Will Menningsen. Leading out the swim will more than likely be Andrew Horsfall Turner and then Robert Callen. You also have Andy Dreets. All these guys are looking to get a early Kona slot for next year. So
yeah, can we just talk about for a second the like, you know, how big of a deal it is if you podium at the race that you don't have to validate?
What do you mean?
Well, yeah, if you podium, you don't have to validate your spot.
You don't have to work.
So it used to just be
so Magnus win. Doesn't have to do another Ironman.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And
Magnus
so just
doesn't have to do an Ironman, and Magnus doesn't have to do an Ironman.
Yeah, and I think we don't know what this looks like yet, but obviously there's a lot of speculation around what the PTO calendar will look like. You know, it provides a lot of flexibility for the athletes that did podium, is what I'm saying. And to not, you know, a lot of times you don't have to think about doing one of these November, December Ironmans that you can just kind of jog through to validate your spot. So, yeah, I think that's an adjustment to the rules that's been positive for those that have earned it.
Yeah. Also, another Ironman this weekend is Ironman Maryland. Sam Long's eyeing that one, as well as Justin Metzler, Michael Weiss, Adam Fay, who raced in Nice, so may not race. Cody Beals got big sights set on this race as well. On the women's side, you have Sarah Crowley, Alice Alberts, who won the race earlier this year at Ironman Lake Placid, Meredith Kessler, and many, many others. So
Dee Dee Griesbauer is racing as well.
Be tracking those races coming up this weekend. You also have 70.3 Michigan. Oh, that'll be good. 70.3 Michigan, you have Tamara Jewett, Jackie Herring, Lauren Brandon. And then on the men's side, you have Jackson Laundry, Trevor Foley, Lionel Sanders, Matt Sharp. The list kind of goes on from there.
Can we just talk about Michigan for a second? Because this is the first time that they've done a pro race there. Is that correct?
In Traverse City, yeah. Or wherever it's at, Frankfort.
Yeah. It's in Frankfort. But yes, right. First time in Frankfort. They've done races before there, though.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's in the what I like to call the glove of Michigan, and it's pretty far north, and we're now getting into the third week of September. I think it's going to be cold in the morning of that race, what adjustments will that make to the race if they do wake up? I mean, there's a world where it could be 39 degrees on race start morning. And now I want to just now, because I'm on my internet machine, I want to just look at the weather.
54 and raining.
Oh, the high?
No, the high is 64. But when you're coming out of the water and it's going to be sprinkling on you at 55 degrees, it's pretty chilly.
Yeah. So let's just keep an eye on that one. That's an interesting one. And, Talbot and I will be paying special attention to it.
I will be heading out there to do not race week with Lionel, but a race recap with Lionel, and we'll catch up with Lionel on YouTube. But Pat might make the trip out.
You and I might be doing a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles to get there.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite the hike.
Another fun race coming up this weekend, Challenge Samarkand, which is in Uzbekistan. Get a load of this. There's four women racing. Emma Pallant-Brown, Ellie Salthouse, Margie Santamaria, and Lottie Lucas. On the men's side, there's 3, 6, 7 men racing. You have Freddie Funk, Aaron Royal, Sebastian Kienle, Felipe Azevedo, and then a couple Frenchmen. So
you know what?
Not Jon Stratman?
I don't know that he didn't make it on the start list. So maybe he's racing. Did he announce that he was racing on his Instagram?
Oh, it might have been Aaron Royal and Fred Funk talking about it. They were talking to, I believe, was it Pat and I or Mark and I about this at the PTO US Open. They're getting paid a good little appearance fees to show up and have some fun. So it'll be a fun little race.
Good for them. I mean, this was the whole reason I went to this race in Karlovy Vary. Was I've been blessed to travel the world, but I've never been to the Czech Republic. And so when Gwen was like, I'm doing a race in the Czech Republic, I raised my hand and I said, can I please come? Because I would like to go see it. And she's doing another race in Chile in November down in South America. And again, I've never been there. So, these athletes, I hope that they can do some experiential things along the way too. And, I've never been to.
What do you eat in Uzbekistan?
Dude, I mean, that's what I would want to find out. I think it's going to be an amazing trip, and I can't wait to hear about it. Good for these guys for going and checking it out and getting.
How close is Uzbekistan to, like, where Borat's from? Kazakhstan or.
I'm sure it's all. That's close. Yeah. I think geographically,
it's probably much closer. All in the same area.
Geographically, it's pretty close. So, yeah, I think it's going to be sweet. I can't wait to hear about it.
So good.
So all right.
The only race being streamed this weekend, 70.3 Knock Heist in Belgium. You have a big, big, big start list here, obviously, because it's going to be televised. Big hitters with the likes of Peter Heimerich, Kyle Smith, Kenneth Vandendreis on the men's side. You also have Nicholas Mann, Pablo De Pina, Nicholas Quinet, who more than likely will win the race, go wire to wire, if I'm going to predict it. Also, Patrick Nielsen. On the women's side, you have Dee Dee Dierks and Nina Duran, Renee Kiley, who had the fastest bike split at Elmire this weekend, and Manon Ghent. So there's a lot of people racing, but those are just the big names that stand out. So.
And this is being live streamed, you said?
Live streamed, yeah.
By like the independent organization or Ironman?
By Ironman on Outside Watch.
Okay, I don't see it on their.
It's on their Instagram. It's on their Instagram post.
Oh, all right, there you go.
So,
but guys, we got any hot takes? Can we whisper?
We have a lot.
It seems like
let me hit the first one.
All right.
The first one was Look, all these starlets are coming out. Jason West is clearly recovered, and he posts exciting racing ahead. Can you guess where I'm racing at next? And I figured he'd be showing up in Michigan or showing up in Augusta, but both those start lists are out, and I don't know what other racing he could be doing. So I'm excited to see. I heard a few whispers about Jason West, but I'm excited to see what he does because, I mean, Jason West, I would say, is one of the front runners next year for the PTO events. He is absolutely on fire right now. And not in any way knocking Jason, but when you don't have Christian or Jan showing up to these events next year, because Jan's IE retired and Christian is all in for the Olympics next year, Jason West is going to be the number one athlete in the world to beat. So it's exciting to follow him and see where he goes. But I mean, he's not showing up on any start list, so I'm wondering where he's going to race next.
Is that all we get to say about it? Is that all we're going to say about it?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
We'll leave it at that.
We've reached out to Jason West's people to get him to come on to probably share where his next races are going to be. We're working on that. It's been a little pin the tail on the donkey to try and get him to come on, but we're making a big effort to do so.
Yeah. Next one is Kona Bike Count. This is a pretty incredible thing. Sorry, you say Kona Bike Count, but this is actually the Nice Bike Count. But the reason why I want to hit on this, because it's pretty wild. In 2015, Canyon had 5 or 6 bikes in the race. Okay, Cervelo and Trek usually absolutely dominate this.
Hold on a second. Go back to Jason West. I just did a little investigative research. And according to Triathlon Live, there is a start list that is out, a World Cup in Brazil that Jason West will be doing next.
Wow.
Hey, so,
I mean,
you can't hide the start list. That's what we're saying.
Start list. If you find it on the start list, it's official.
You can.
Well, we heard through the grapevine that he was going to make a run for Paris, and I think he could be a very valuable asset to Team USA, especially that fourth relay leg. So, I mean, the second member of the male. I mean, you got someone who can swim very good. He can ride a bike now. He's proven he can ride a bike hard, and he can run really good. So this could be the missing piece for America. I don't know why else you'd be showing up to a world to a ITU race, draft legal race, but if anyone could do it.
Yeah. And I would imagine, you know, part of the rationale is there's a lot of World Cups left at the end of the year. He could probably get in 2, maybe 3, and some other world triathlon races. And the reality is if he gets completely blown out of the water, which I don't think he will, he would look at it and go, okay, look, well, I still have time to sneak on to the PTO stuff, which I'm already ranked super high for. So I think this is a beautiful idea. I think I'm backing him 100%. I think it's super, super interesting and cool.
So that's the Jason West drama.
Okay, sorry. Go back to the bike count.
The Canyon thing. This isn't a sponsor ad or anything. I'm real good friends with Wolfie, who's the engineer for Canyon. But I mean, 5 bikes in Kona in 2015, and 10 years nearly. And Wolfie spent 10 years of his life dedicating to their new tri bike, and it was the number one bike in Nice. So you could say that that's a little bit of LeBron James money. That's sponsoring Jan Frodeno, couple world title. The reason I say LeBron James money, he's one of the owners of Canyon with a round of investing, which is pretty funny. But hats off to them, number one bike in Nice. We'll have to see if that carries over to the female side, Kona, as well. But
yeah, and they went 1-2 in the men's race without Jan Frodeno being one of them. And so I think that's hats off to them. That's a big accomplishment, and they've been spending a lot in that space, and which is great for our sport. Puts a lot of pressure on the other brands. So, yeah.
And they did do a lot of testing going into Nice. They had some athletes. They actually, with all their tests they came up with, they told some athletes to ride some TT bikes, some athletes to ride some modified aero road bikes, but it looks like all the athletes went with the TT bikes. So, yeah.
Yep.
Pat, what's the next one?
Oh boy, I got to click into it. Hold on, hold on. Wait a minute. What is this, big names in the VIP at Nice? I don't know anything about that.
I mean, I think that's the cool part about having the race over in Europe. Did you not see all the photos of the big names there?
No, I didn't see any of this. I'm sorry.
The coolest picture of the weekend, I thought, the whole weekend, was a picture that Luke McKenzie grabbed.
Oh, sure.
And it's Mark Cavendish, the Max Missile, tied for the most wins ever at the Tour de France. And he's in VIP chatting with Jan. So I thought that was pretty cool. Two goats of their sports chatting it out. And I'm sure Jan has tremendous respect for Mark Cavendish as well. But George Hancappy there all weekend, riding up and down the course there in the VIP tent. I mean, pretty cool. Chris Froome. Yeah, Chris Froome's there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in professional cycling, that's where a lot of people live. And so it's no surprise to see him out and about. But yeah, great to see. I mean, this is the, when the race is in Europe as compared to Kona, this is what happens, right? It's just a lot easier for people to travel in. And it's something that part of it is really exciting to me.
Yeah. And then now the name escapes me of another very high profile cyclist. But it was pretty funny because we've heard lots of rumors that he's going to make a go at triathlon. Now I can't even think of his name. Pat might be able to know it. But Mark Cavendish even reshared his post and said, hope you're not here next year dusting all of us. What was the pro cyclist name?
I'm not sure. You're going to have to do a little research.
We'll have to do a little research to get to you next week. But so, I mean, it's a very high level cyclist that they can swim and run really good as well.
Next hot take, Talbot's been doing a lot of his own investigative work and making a lot of Excel charts. And Talbot, I think, can you give the listeners an understanding of how important where the top 16 will end up, and then how that we believe that will roll over into these PTO contracts that we've been hearing a ton about for 2024?
Well, first off, I just think that I want to tip my hat to PTO. The rankings have never been more clear. I mean, I was laughing about this weekend because when they finished the race, you knew exactly how many points Sam Laidlaw got for the race. And I'm not knocking the old – well, no, yes, I am knocking the old system. It was completely embarrassing last year that you had someone go in a basement and come up with some magic of juju and just give athletes random numbers. It was completely terrible. So – hats off. The new ranking system has been so incredible all year long. Been very fair. If you want to get high points, you go race the best athletes in the world. One athlete that doesn't have a whole lot of high points on this list, and maybe he is where he needs to be, but look at Lionel Sanders. He's outside of the top 20 right now, and he has not been racing the highest caliber athletes in the world. And so he hasn't been at all the big races. So it's unfortunate, but it's just where it's at. But something that we're watching really closely is with the recent PTO announcement, they're taking 16 people on tour next year. These 16 athletes will sign contracts, big contracts that are going to have travel compensation, going to be financially assisted as well. And it's their job and duty to show up at all these races, which is very interesting to see this back half of the year, because you got someone the likes of Sam Long, who he's going to try to go ahead and punch his Ironman ticket, because I was just chatting with Rhys Barclay earlier this week, and the rumors are there's going to be between, let's say, we already chatted about this on our podcast, 6 to 8 races next year. Let's just meet in the middle. Let's say there's going to be 7. The first race is in April. The last race is in October. I mean, are you really going to have time to go do some Ironmans? Or what about Kona next year? Because a lot of these athletes have signed this contract, it's going to be a conflict of interest. Is Kona and is Ironman going to bend over backwards is PTO going to bend over backwards? I mean, I just think that this might be the year that we see that the high caliber Ironman events are not going to be as high caliber as we thought. Plus the points, these are $650,000 is going to be the prize money at all these events. So What I'm getting to is we're watching the rankings very closely, because they're giving away 16 contracts, we can go ahead and write, if you look at the top 16 ranked athletes in the world right now, you can write Christian off because he's not going to accept a contract. He's full in on the Olympics next year. So he can take wild cards, I would say, at any race he wants to go to. Jason West is another question mark. He could do good this fall and chase the Olympic dream this year. Another one you can take out of the top is Jan Frodeno. So then that means that it rolls three more deep. But I guess the question we have is, and this is more for our listeners, should they take the top 16 ranked athletes that accept contracts and then roll down? Or should they, is it going to turn into a TV show and you take the athletes that are, you believe can compete with the best, maybe didn't make into the top 20 or 16? So I don't know. It's kind of a question. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
I vote on giving 15 contracts and doing 10 wild cards. So doing 25 total athletes is what I would be on the boat of, for the simple fact that you have all these athletes that you don't know wild card wise how they'll fare. You have Javier Gomez coming back into the sport, who 100% should get a wild card every single time. He's 2-time 70.3 world champion, one of the most decorated short course athletes of all time. Everyone loves watching him race. He's same thing as Alistair Brownlee. Alistair Brownlee, another person that should get a wild card. The Norwegians, who will be more than likely focusing on something else, maybe not doing every single race, but you have them doing some races. The interesting thing will be, does the Ironman world champion, Sam Laidlow, does he take a contract or does he turn the PTO down and say, I don't really want to do PTO races this year?
No, so I disagree on about 90% of that. And this is only why, if you're PTO, you're wanting to have the highest caliber athletes at your race week in and week out. You don't want to give their job with these contracts is to not sign Joe Schmo. It is to get Alistair Brownlee on a contract to be at all seven of your events. It is to get the biggest names in the sport to race every single weekend. Sam Laidlow turning down a contract, I would say, actually completely impossible. Sam Laidlow's focus is going to be the PTO events next year, and then one thing, Kona. He doesn't have to qualify for Kona for the next 5 years. He doesn't need to go validate. He doesn't need to do anything now, and he's going to sign the contract. I think that, in my opinion, PTO should be giving out 20 contracts and have 5 wild cards at each event. I think that 20 on the start list is too small. What are your thoughts, Pat?
I think that where we're going to want to fall with the number is somewhere between 25 and 30 ultimately. My biggest fear or hurdle that I have in my mind is, how come every time that they've done a race, there hasn't been 100% buy-in from the athletes? And I don't have the answer on what incentives need to be in place to ensure that at 7 of the 7 races, you have a red hot field. And I think we were pretty close in Milwaukee on the men's side for sure. That was a great field.
Abiza as well.
Sure. But I think that Singapore, you know, we could say that just wasn't great on either the men or the women's side. So if you're going to these places that are challenging to get to, how do we overcome the athletes that want to opt out to do something else? Because the problem that I see is Ironman still reigns supreme for 70.3 worlds and Ironman world championships. Those are very important races that athletes do not want to miss. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, if I was on the board of PTO and they have a lot of money, but they don't have an infinite amount of money, what do you do to ensure that you have the highest quality field to get your TV numbers out of control? And that's what I don't have an answer for.
Well, you're not going to have a consistency of high caliber starters if you're giving out 10 contracts. You need to get all those high profile. This is where I say, I don't want to say a TV show. And yes, I do sound biased. And you know what? You can probably argue that Lionel is not going to do good at a lot of the PTO races. But I believe that you would want to, even though Lionel's outside of the top 20 right now, you would want to get him on contract because you want Lionel. He brings the attention, the media, the hype to the events. And so I do know
the PTO has started to reach out to athletes to let them know, look, we want to make you a permanent fix for next year. Let's chat soon. We can share the schedule with you. We do know the PTO is releasing schedules next year. And the reason why we're spending so much time on this hot take, is that this is what we're going to be talking about all year next year. Like, I don't think we're going to be talking about 70.3 St. George North American Championship. I mean, seven times next year, we're going to watch the best athletes in the world duke it out in a course. And so that's why I just think that a lot of these athletes, i.e. Sam Long, is thinking in his head, I don't have time to race an Ironman next year. Not only do I have time, but I don't have an Ironman build in me if I'm wanting to do this right. And I need to punch my Kona ticket now in Maryland. And then I can prepare for 100K distance all next year. So, and then to argue that too as well, Pat, I see this, I could be wrong. I would say that next year's Kona, the depth of field will not be there. I said this in 2022. This will be the last strong Kona we ever see, the depth of field wise. And I think it's going to lack it this year as well. And I think it's only going to get worse from here. Kyle?
Pat, can you put your agent hat on real quick? And are brands starting to put more of a pedigree on PTO races now this year than they were, say, when the PTO started kind of coming into the fold with the PTO race in 2020?
Sure. So they brands are acknowledging the PTO with bonuses, but there's still a void in between winning a PTO race and winning an Ironman World Championship or a 70.3 World Championship. That has not surpassed yet. And certainly, you know, now I could see a world where we're going to have to write in, you are a, much like with a World Series overall and being a World Series World Champion, it's going to be the same thing with, are you a PTO World Series World Champion, and what is that worth? And brands are going to have to figure that out. And it's one of the things that I say in sports marketing all the time. It's not, don't tell me about what you're going to do. Show me what you're doing, and then I can assess a value that I'm going to put on it. So there's still going to be a bit of a tail on that. That's not going to be something that, there will be very few brands that are going to be proactive for that. It's going to be reactive. And so I think that's still 2 or 3, 4 years coming down the road.
This is what I mean by depth of field though, Pat. Let's take athletes like Freddie Funk and Aaron Royal. You had no option in the middle distance to stay at the middle distance. It was, you go to Kona. Depth of field, everyone went to Kona.
Yeah.
Next year's Kona, you are going to see the likes of Gustav and Christian will be there post-Olympics. They'll have about a good little build that they can do. And you're going to see Sam Laidlow and those guys, all the guys that they know they have a chance at winning. But you're not going to see a lot of those other guys up there. They're going to say, you know, forget this. Like, we're still racing on the PTO circuit. There's no reason for us to go. So that's why I think that depth of field is really going to start to weaken. And I think it's going to lose its prestigiousness, in my opinion.
It's possible. Yeah, there. It's possible. So look, I mean, I think a lot of it, we got to wait and see. We'd love to see a schedule. We'd love to have a little bit more clarity.
I mean, we're hoping that it's supposed to be early October. So we'll see if we make that deadline.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do you want to know in negotiation 101, do you want to know what we say about deadlines?
What?
They're BS, man.
I feel that. I feel that.
But they are, the PTO is starting to reach out to their athletes. I mean, I would, like, it will be very interesting to see next year who all they sign. And then another thing to add onto the tour is they want the same athletes racing every week because they are going to do a big media push shooting. I mean, every one of their dog uses this term, a Drive to Survive F1 like Netflix series. They're going to do that over the PTO tour next year. And if you have 16 guys on contract, you can really get to know all those 16 guys. And it is really cool. It's like this, like the WSL surfing tour. It's like you get the same guys show up every week, and then you get 5 to 10 wild cards, guys that get to prove their shot. So, and then this is only two. This is so much better for the lower tier pros, the ones that are up and coming, they can now, you're not going to see the likes of Ben Canute, Jackson Laundrie, Sam Long, Lionel Sanders showing up to the Ironman North American 70.3 championship. It gives
your Ben Deals of the world that
have been they can really succeed.
Sixth, seventh, eighth, and
make
now they
prize money.
Get a dub.
Exactly. I'm excited. I'm really, really excited for the future of the PTO. This really excites me.
Let's see what happens. I think that's a great place to end today's show. What a year it's been. And I think we were on the group thread. We were going off on Sunday talking all darn day about it. Talbot and Kyle were in and out of sleeplessness. It was crazy. And so I think that these are exciting times for the sport. It's exciting times to be doing a podcast. And it was just fun to jam out as the original crew that started it and think about how far the sport's come in 3 years versus, and what the three of us have done and what's to come. So, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. There is 6 more episodes left on the season. I'm sure we will pop our heads in and out in the off season, but 6 more left in the season. That'll take us into Kona and do a post Kona show. But other than that, we really appreciate you guys listening. And if you are an avid listener and you haven't left a review, we would be greatly appreciated whether you listen on Spotify, BuzzFeed, iTunes podcast or Apple podcast. We would love if you could give us a review. It would mean a lot to us. And other than that, we will see you next week with a post race Michigan show.
No, pre Pontevedra.
Pre-Pontevedra. That's right. Pre-grand final.
You got people vying for those points. It's going to be crazy. It'll be a great show. And I think Chris Gimmel's going to be joining us. So it'll be exciting.
Oh, look at that. Chris Gimmel and Chelsea, both on the show. All right. We'll see you next week.
All right. Forgot one last thing. We're going to leave you with interviews that Jordan Blanco was able to get from us from Nice. So enjoy those. And we'll see you guys next week.
Testing. Okay. So I'm here with Sam Lado, Ironman world champion. On your Instagram today, you put one hit wonder, and you talked about it a little bit, but can you explain a little bit more about kind of what it means to repeat a podium performance and even go one step better this year on a very different course, under different conditions, in a different country, and how important that is to like your continuing career and growth in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that, I mean, after all, I've dedicated my life to this unique race, you know? And yes, I do other races, and I don't really care if I do well or not in them. But yeah, I wish on anybody to devote 20 years to something and then finally achieve it. You know, I've never felt anything like it. And, it's definitely the biggest high of my life.
Yeah. And the other thing on the finish line, you were very, very quick to call out your brother, your mother, your father, and allude to the team effort and the family effort that's been. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm here. My team, I generally think, is better than anyone. And I said it at the start of the year. And I think I learned that from seeing how Jan works. I think Jan has an amazing team around him. It's like as you progress, so like since last year in Kona, for instance, like so many people want a piece of you. And so you kind of need more and more people to do various things, you know. So now I have, like, after Kona, it meant that I could finally pay my dad. Well, I was paying him already, but, like, pay him a real salary, pay my girlfriend to just do, like, to be my, like, PA, basically. Now I have a manager and then physio. And, you know, it's just surrounding yourself with good people, but most importantly, people that believe in you.
Yeah, and when I think about Jan, that's a great example. What Jan does really well and what I've seen of his career over the years is he invests in himself, and it sounds like that's what you've been doing.
Yeah, invest in your own ecosystem. Yeah, I'm all for that. And I even have some small notes written with my dad and girlfriend where they basically double their salary if I win the race. So
it's going to cost you, but okay, sorry, one last question. Need some water? My last question is, like, it was a kind of a one lap bike course, a little small out and back. Like, were you getting any information out on the bike course, like the time you were putting into the guys behind?
Yeah, I was. There were not in Kona, the actual organization give you gaps. So I think I had Chris Lieto giving me gaps in, well, Matt Lieto, sorry, in Kona. But here we just had, I knew people from around France who'd come to cheer me on, and so they gave me the gaps. And yeah, similar to last year in Kona, it was just all really positive, you know, gap just kept growing basically.
Awesome. Congratulations. Well done.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Hi. This is Mika.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
I just, first of all, wanted to ask you, thinking about all your kind of performances in Kona, how gratifying is it for you to get on a podium in a completely different course that required different skill set from you? And yeah, can you talk a little bit about like what that means to you?
Yeah, it's really satisfying to have proven that I'm able to, I didn't want, but perform really well in different locations. Yeah, especially German media was really harsh on that over the last couple of years, saying, oh, he can only perform in Kona. And I think in the last, 3-4 years, I have proven that I'm a much better athlete now. I have wins in Israel, in Tulsa, in Ross. So in all, you know, times of the year and different locations. And yeah, it's great. It was great success today. I'm really proud of that. Really proud of my team, how we developed as a team, and how we managed the whole week and the race. So Sam was in a different league today, and so I'm really, really happy and really proud of this strong second place.
Awesome. Great. Do you want to ask one question? How did you prepare for the different bike course?
Mm-hmm. We did a lot of testing going into that race. I spent time in January and in July here, seeing the course, riding the course. We did all the testing that technically is possible. We went to the wind tunnel with different types of bikes, went to the velodrome, tested different setups of bikes, and I really did a big effort in finding the perfect setup for this race. Obviously, threw some weight out of the bike, etc. So I think that was the main focus that we work on. Yeah.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked, obviously.
And sorry, one more about the bike part. You get better and better as you go to the second half.
Yeah.
The last part of the bike. Did you plan that way?
No, I think that's just how my body works. The longer the race, the better I get, I feel. And that's what I was always, before the race, also said, that the longer the race is, it's actually the better it is for me. So I was looking forward to going into that race, because I was really sure that finishing under 8 hours won't be possible here.
Magnus, do you have a minute for an interview? The Pro Tri News. I'm with Magnus Ditlev, who just finished third here in Nice. Magnus, can you talk us through your day a little bit?
Yeah, it was overall a really tough day. I felt I was suffering the whole day, and the bike course was so tough, and that made up a really long run with the crowd out there was amazing, and it was a pleasure running on the promenade.
No, it was a longer day than, say, you're doing in Kona, like with the bike 20 plus minutes longer. How did that like change your tactics in the race and how you prepared and kind of executed your race tactics?
Yeah, I rode the first part pretty aggressively, and I knew I had to get a buffer to Patrick and some of the faster runners, and I got that, but that also was in the body for the run, so I was not feeling super good on the run, but I managed to take the podium, which I'm super happy for.
Yeah, congratulations. You had a 2:41 run, which was like faster than your Kona performance last year. Can you compare like the run conditions here to something like Kona?
Yeah, it was super hot, like almost as hot as Kona, I think. But of course, the humidity is higher in Kona, but I felt it was a super tough run course. Also, it's just flat the whole way, so you just engage the same muscles all the way. And I was struggling big time and had a lot of doubts whether I would even make it to the finish line. So
Well, you did, and you made a podium, which is amazing. Congratulations. Last question. Can you talk a little bit about the atmosphere in Nice and like the stature of it being a world championship course?
Yeah, obviously Nice has a lot of history with triathlon, and it was you can really feel that throughout the whole day. Obviously, the bike course is like one loop, so that affects the spectators. But even that, I think there was a lot of people out on the bike, and the run was for sure the highlight spectator-wise, and you felt like you could, I felt like I knew someone along the whole course.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm here with Rudy von Berg, fourth place today at the Ironman World Championships, but probably your best ever performance at an Ironman. Can you kind of talk us through your day a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say best performance ever. I was feeling really good on all three sports. So I was definitely a bit worried before the race. I thought I might be able to do this, but also part of me was, I'm the type of guy, I'm not that good in training, so I never get the full confidence from that. I mean, if you look at my training numbers, I don't know, you'd think I'd finish, maybe between 10th and 15th or at best. And I can always just really step it up on race day. So that's what happened. And it's a world championship, so it's kind of crazy to me that with that kind of performance on a course that suits me, that I'm not even on the podium. But the sport is evolving, and the times are getting just faster and faster. So awesome race.
But your time is getting faster too. And if I recall correctly, is that like 8-10 weeks since you had a bit of a bike crash and a spill and maybe broke your collarbone? I forget the injury. I'm sorry, but can you talk about like your recovery from that and the training since?
Right. Yeah, I crashed on June 9. Broke my collarbone, vertebra, and a finger. And so I had about 9 weeks of training post recovery from that. So it wasn't ideal, but finally in the last few weeks I started feeling better and getting better numbers. So it worked out well.
And you talked a little bit then, going back to your first comments, about your training and how you're not PRing in every training session. Obviously, you're building load day after day. You're never as fresh as race day. So can you expand a little bit on why you never don't think you can perform in training?
Honestly, I don't know if it's more just the mental edge and I can really perform on race day. But I always just see numbers from other guys, and I was looking at times of Clément Mignon and Strava, and or just any time people post things, and I'm not really close to those guys. So
yeah. Interesting. And you had your fastest ever run today, I believe, in an Ironman event. Can you compare? You've only done Kona once, I believe. Can you compare the conditions and how running here in Nice, France, and the overall environment was, and whether that played a part in your faster run?
No, it's a world championship, so you're a little more on it, and the competition's stiffer, and the spectators were really pushing us. But my fastest run was this year in Texas, 2:45. Before that, I didn't have any really good run. Last year in Kona, my nutrition wasn't good. Last year was my first year of Ironmans, and I was completely neglecting sodium intake. This year, literally just sodium intake propulsed my run to much higher heights. And 2:45 in Texas, 2:41 here, 5 seconds a K quicker. So it's actually exactly the time I was kind of... I told myself at best that's what I would do, pretty much 240, 241, well, 350 K, which is like 241.30 or something. And I did exactly that. So after that ride, where I had really good legs as well, it was as good as I could have hoped for, really.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks so much, Rudy.
You could have a great race and win. You could have a great race and come 12th. You could have a mediocre race and come 5th. It's just, it's a world champs, and it's like, you never really know what you're going to get. And, this is my best finish so far. So I've got to be happy with that. Top 5 really isn't bad. It's probably my best overall Ironman. Like when you look at where I'm at in the swim and a bike where that was actually pretty big power, I guess, but not quite what I hoped, but that's what it is. But then I backed off with a really strong marathon. And, yeah.
Just a quick word for your support team. Apologies.
That's right.
Laurie, and also your coaching staff as well. You know, what was the input that they've had into your performance, your evolution as an athlete?
Well, everything. This summer was pretty tough because I went up to altitude for 8.5 weeks, but Florrie had to stay home for most of the time to work. I had the dog, and Florrie was able to come out for a couple weeks, but then I had to go back out because we'll go back home again. So yeah, I really missed home and missed Florrie, but I had like great support from people coming out to train with me. And yeah, I had a bit of a wobble early, late July around Alpe d'Huez, but then when it really mattered, I put my head down in training, and I was flying in training, so that was really good.
Just a couple of thoughts on the guys that finished ahead of you today.
Yeah, I couldn't have beaten, I couldn't have done better today, and like, they were miles ahead, so
yeah.
Mightily impressed. Yeah.
What did you think of Sam Laidlaw's performance?
I think it was the mid-climb, Rob, my coach, was giving us splits. I think Sam and Clement had 5 minutes on me already. And yeah, Sam just like pushed out that gap, just mega, like he got to that part which is probably not the part that suited him the best, and then when he got to the bit that did suit him, he was obviously going to pull out an even bigger gap. And everyone knows the speed at the front of the race is always higher than somewhere else. Literally on the promenade at the very end coming to T2, I had one motorbike come and like film me, and I gained like 3 kilometers an hour, like just like that. I was like, oh, this is nice.
It's a difference.
But then obviously went off to film someone else, so it wasn't long lasted. But yeah, you need to earn your right to be at the front of the race. And like Sam, like, oh, he had a lot of pressure coming to this race, and everyone is saying he's not had a great season, but it seems like, you know, come World Champs Day, he like just has a cracker of a day, and that's what matters. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Leo. Appreciate all of that.
Yeah, cheers, Sam.
One more question for me. This is the coach I knew.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've done all the big races like Ironman, like Alpe d'Huez. Like, how did that help you tackle this course? Did it give you confidence knowing that you've done those like hilly courses in the past and been successful?
Yeah, what I said in interviews is at least like I'm used to running off like a really hard bike, whereas I think a lot of guys, they manage to get through so many races just like, yeah, poodling around on the bike, and then they get these mega fast runs. But you know, it's a whole different ball game running fast off a bike where you really have to try. And today, if you didn't try on the bike, you're going to lose a lot of time. So yeah, I'm really happy that, you know, I pushed quite hard on the bike, and I still ran like fast. I think we'll say that was going to be a fast run. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not that many people ran sub 2:40. I mean, obviously Patrick did 2:32, but then
2:32.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive that you went 2:39. So
yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah, thanks.
Well done. Thanks.